I love the study of religion because for me it combines, you know, history and psychology and art. And I'm just a naturally ecumenical, interspiritual person. Like So sometimes, you know, in these days, especially when there are these, you know, flare-ups of religious wars or Christian nationalism, it's like these are constructs that human beings made. And I kind of see the beauty in it. You know, I can understand people going like, "Oh, all religion is bad," but it's like it's sort of saying like all food is bad because we eat too many donuts, you know.
Hey, everyone, welcome to the show. My guest this week, Amy Brenneman from FX's The Old Man, which is an awesome series. We're going to get to her in a minute. Before we do, on the road with my Broadway show, Permission to Speak. We're having a lot of fun with it. We were just in Milwaukee with it. We're going to be going to Annapolis, Maryland, November 23rd. We're also going to Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, the Broward County Center for the Performing Arts. We're going to United Theater in Westerly, Rhode Island, my hometown. We've got a whole bunch of dates coming up. Go to paulmercurio.com. Love you to come see the show. We're having a great time. Beautiful set designed by the set designer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. It's directed by Frank Oz, and animation by J.J. Settlemyer, who did Beavis and Butthead and all the SNL TV Funhouse videos. So really cool show. Really proud of it and having a great time. Hope you can make it. Go to paulmercurio.com for tickets. Before we get to my guest, looking for a new mattress. We saw a mattress that was $7,000. For $7,000, that mattress better give me an amazing night's sleep and completely eliminate all of my worries and cares that keep me up at night when I lie in bed. It better straighten out my back. It better improve my performance in bed, if you know what I mean. It's got to do a lot for $7,000, okay? The other thing is, there is this politician in North Carolina that's running for governor, this guy, and he... apparently said really racist, horrible things on a porn site chat room. Didn't even know porn sites had comment boards and chat rooms. Why? Why would you be chatting? Like, I don't even like to talk during real sex, let alone simulated sex. And this was, you know, you're typing. So how are you doing that watching porn? I mean... yeah, I'm assuming he can type one-handed, right? Because, you know, I don't know. What's the chit-chat? What do you say? You're watching porn with other people. What is it like? Oh, the Mets had a great year, huh? Oh, I had the most amazing everything bagel. Oh, bagel, bagel. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, it's like, what do you... I don't know. I guess... talking and sex is a good thing, I guess. I don't know, for a relationship. Anyway, maybe you have a $7,000 mattress. Maybe that would make a difference in your porn viewing habits. All right, listen, Amy Brenneman is my guest. Amazing actress. You know her from Judging Amy, Veep. She plays Zoe, the love interest and co-star with Jeff Bridges in FX's The Old Man. It's a really great series if you haven't watched it. This is a really fun interview. I never met her before. We just really hit it off. She's really funny. And we really get into a lot of cool stuff. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with her and hope to see you on the road with Permission to Speak. PaulMercurio.com for tickets. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week, an absolutely terrific actress, producer, writer, Amy Brenneman. You know her from her Emmy and Golden Globe nominated work on Judging Amy, Goliath, Veep, and she currently stars in the fantastic series on FX, The Old Man with Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow, which is in season two. Great to have you on the show. Love the show. Wonderful to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And we have something in common. You grew up in New London and you went to Glastonbury High, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I have we have a place up like 15 minutes from New London in Stonington, in Lloyd's Point. So we're up there a lot. It's great up there.
Oh, it's such a pretty area. I love that area. I lived in Essex until I was 3 and then we moved to Glastonbury. So yeah, but Connecticut's so small, you know.
Right. And did I read your parents met at law school? Because I went to law school. I was a lawyer for a little while before I got into this part of the business. But did your parents meet in law school?
They did. My mom was in the very first class of women at Harvard Law School.
Wow.
So they met in, I was going to say episode one in the first year, and then they got married. So the really cool stat, I mean, my mother was one of 13 women and, you know, whatever, 500 men. But the really cool stat is that they were the first married couple at Harvard Law.
Oh, wow. I was going to say, because I went to law school and you're so busy, it's like, you know, because nothing says romance like a constitutional law class, you know, like that's how you... it's like,
really
that's
sexy.
That's where you, yeah, exactly. You know what? I could go to a bar, but I think I'm going to pick somebody up at Torts. That's what I'm going to do. So funny. We're going to talk about the old man in a minute, but you studied comparative religion at Harvard, and you co-founded a theater group. So what was it about acting that pulled you in that direction? And if you were going to go into comparative religion in, you know, as your profession, I mean, what would you have done, do you think? A priest, maybe? A reverend? A minister?
It's so funny, because I'm considering going back for a master's at the Div School at Harvard, like a year-long program. I love the study of religion because, for me, it combines, you know, history and psychology and art. And I'm just a naturally ecumenical, interspiritual person. Like so sometimes, you know, in these days, especially when there are these, you know, flare-ups of religious wars or Christian nationalism, it's like these are constructs that human beings made. And I kind of see the beauty in it. You know, I can understand people going like, "Oh, all religion is bad," but it's like it's sort of saying like all food is bad because we eat too many donuts. You know, it's like people
right.
have. Spiritual people were meaning makers, right? A friend of mine who's a Lutheran minister, she introduced me that phrase, like, we're looking for meaning, you know, and so we'll do that with art, or we'll look at it in politics. Obviously, we're telling lots of stories and trying to find meaning. So in terms of the performance piece of it, I was always interested in sacred dance, in ritual, right? This kind of sweet spot of theater and ritual, right? And catharsis, really. You know, and we tell each other, and we tell stories so that we can kind of share a human experience, you know, and maybe come out differently than we went in. So it's always really, I mean, to me, the big leap, honestly, was to film and television, because theater feels so ancient to me. And I love being in rooms with people. It took me a minute, and I'm still sort of, I mull on that, like how to get that immediacy with film and television, because there's kind of millions of phases between my and you guys watching it, you know, where theater is so immediate.
Yeah. Well, there's two things you mentioned, story and connection, that really resonate with me. I did a show off Broadway, which we're now taking on tour, at Frank Oz is directing. And it's the premise of the show is we're nameless, faceless, and divisive. But if we get together and share stories, we realize we have more in common than we think, and we can make some connections and look at other people's lives outside of our own. And what I do is I go up and tell stories, but then I just randomly bring people up from the audience and start talking to them. And I get these incredible stories. And then, it's really been cool. So, and then after the show, people are going up and connecting with each other and saying, "Oh, you know, you're from Milwaukee. I heard you on stage. I'm from Milwaukee," or blah, blah, blah. "You played football. I played football in high school." Like, so, I think there needs to be more of that, and that's what we're trying to do. But anyway, enough about me.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for telling me about that. No, I think in this grand experiment that we continue to be on, and I said that to my 19-year-old son the other day, I was like, right now, I think like the negative to positive of social media, I think negative is sort of winning, and it's because of, you know, frankly, how it's just capitalism. It's how people make money, right? So it's like, okay, if I get people upset, they'll click, or if they click, they'll be stressed and buy a pair of shoes. And I mean, I continue to deeply believe that human beings have more in common, and human beings want to be kind to each other. But I also think that this is a very powerful tool that we haven't quite gotten on top of. And we will. But obviously, some people are using it in a pretty negative way.
Yeah, we call the show Permission to Speak because that's what we mean. You can pretty much say whatever you want. We don't talk politics, but I don't tell them not to. But and now we're trying to get it on TV because we think there should be something out there for more people than just a few hundred. But I do find that, like, if you're far right and I'm far left, we've been conditioned to think that we're each the devil because you don't believe in 100% of what I believe in. But if I can get you to see that you and I have something in common, then you'll go, well, that person that I thought was the devil is actually kind of like me. So maybe I'll listen to their politics a little bit. That may be a way to connect people through politics, but I'm not sure.
Well, this theater company that you mentioned, it's called Cornerstone. I traveled for about 6 years out of college to we didn't call Red Fake then, but they essentially were. And we did site-specific community-based theater. And so we'd live in places like Northwestern Kansas and Eastern Oregon and, you know, the Marfa, Texas. But we would live there for 3 to 6 months, really, and create a piece of theater with the folks that lived there. And, you know, I was saying to a friend of mine last night who was on the road together, I said, I still believe we could do that. I mean, they might say, like, hey, you know, bunch of, you know, who are you? You know, maybe a little suspicious. But what I do believe is we're not talking very effectively. We just need to be together and do something together, you know, like have a soccer team or make some bread or do a play. And then through the experience, we'll have sort of a common experience. But the talking about it is not getting us where we want to go. And
exactly,
you know, nefarious folks that are taking advantage, that want us to stay in conflict, right? If that's the intention, to have people stay in conflict, we're more likely to stay in conflict. But if our intention is like to find commonality, like your amazing show, we're more likely to do that.
Yeah. All right. That's what we're going to do. You and I are going to go on the road with a road show where we're bringing people in.
I'm going to find you when this is done. And yeah, 100%.
Let's talk about The Old Man. My wife and I, when we first started watching this, we just loved it. And we loved it because I always say, like, if you're watching a talk show, it doesn't really matter what the two people are talking about. You're really drawn in by the relationship between the two people. And I think you said something to that effect about acting. The plot's important, but it's what those people do within the plot that's really interesting. And the characters are so rich, yours and Jeff's especially, and everybody's. But what stands out to me is you're both loners, maybe looking for something, some connection to people, even though you haven't maybe admitted to yourself you want that. Is that fair to say?
For sure. I think the loner piece is key, right? Because you have these people on the surface from like entirely different walks of life and experiences, but they recognize something in each other, right? Which is sort of the model of a great romance, right? And also that Zoe sort of naturally has this spy brain, right? She naturally sees things and all their complications and facets, and you know that first date that they have, and she, you know, Zoe has no idea who he is, but she's just sort of talking about how she sees the world, and you just see this expression on Jeff's face of like, oh, right. Like she thinks like a spy, you know. So I think that's the, and then I, you know, I get tossed into this world. One thing that was really, you know, when I was first approached about this, and I really like, I mean, obviously working with Jeff, I thought it would be a dream, which it has been. But the role itself, I was like, I said to John Steinberg, our showrunner, I was like, am I the girl in a boy movie? I'm a little old for that, you know?
I didn't want to say that, but
what I mean? And I said, it weirdly reminds me some of the bones of it, of Heat, right? Which is sort of this person who's sort of outside of the story, and she finds out that her beloved is a bad guy. And, you know, in Heat, I kind of stay with De Niro when I find out he's a bad guy for reasons I still don't totally understand. And then Steinberg was like, oh no, we talk about that a lot. And we talk about Zoe, we call her Edie Evolved, because Heat's such an amazing movie, and most filmmakers really love that movie. But in terms of the development of the female, you know, it's 20, 25 years later. You're not going to have, and I'm 20, 25 years, you know, older. And so the one really satisfying moment that they wrote was, you know, very similarly, I find out that he's he's a bad guy, or he seems to be, he's involved with all this stuff. And his daughter talks to me, goes to episode three, his daughter talks to me and says, you know, he's a bad guy, but, you know, you should, you know, stick with him. And instead of saying yes, I say, like, get out of my house.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's what you flipped it on its head. And it's like you mentioned Heat. And when I watched that movie, I insulted you personally, your character, because I was yelling, what are you, a moron? Why are you staying with this guy? Don't you see where this is going? God. And I'm yelling at the screen. And yet your character stays with him.
Yeah. No, God bless. I had the same thing, because even though it was 20, 25 years ago, as a feminist I am now. And listen, I'm not averse to myself or my characters being involved in toxic, not healthy relationships. But Michael Mann is still a friend of mine, and the movie is a classic, but it's like, not give in an archetypal story like that, especially now, 2024, to not give the female agency and literally language is not okay. So I'm super happy with that aspect of Old Man, that we get to sort of go back and interrogate some of these things.
Well, take a sort of an offshoot of this, what I'll call female power in this, is that, and you've talked about this, you said, the show's kind of a reexamination of stereotypes. It's this masculine hero, but action hero, but what happens when he gets old, right? And it just is flipping everything on his head. And so, you show him other ways to do things. And there's that scene where you use a completely different approach to get what you want. And it kind of opens his eyes, because he's lived this life so long. I think he's lost track that there are other ways other than this hyper masculinity way of doing things.
Correct. And, in that way, and I guess like circling back to the religion part of it, like I'm always interested. In fact, I can't really connect with a story unless I can sort of what I call understand the archetype, understand sort of the deeper, bigger story, and once I kind of really, and John Steinberg, our writer, is this way as well. Like, it's like, oh, it's really a new world, and this kind of hyper masculine, violent. I mean, you see it in our politics, and it's an active, at this particular moment, a super active discussion, right? Are we going to go back to overpowering, to, a really intense patriarchal system, or are we going to be open, to new ways of doing things, which we kind of have to do environmentally? I mean, we literally have to, think new thoughts in order to save our planet and, but listen, things, old systems are always passing, and new systems. I was just listening to Doris Kearns Goodwin's book about, the Kennedy administration, and anyway, I'm sort of devouring history right now. So this is a very, every generation, it's happening all the time, right? There's an old way and a new way, and there's going to be people attached to the old way. And, I loved when John Steinberg, our writer, he said, I kind of think of this as, I think of Chase as Dan's Jeff's character as Jason Bourne, but 30 years later, right? Jason Bourne 30 years later would have like broken knees, rotator cuff, trauma.
Right.
I mean, it's like a vet, and I mean that in a really respectful way. So, all you see in the Bourne movies is like the heroic action guy, but it's like, how does that age? What is it?
The guy's got a bullet in his shoulder, a knife in his thigh. He's on drugs, but yes, he's able to drive just fine, 85 miles an hour backwards in a taxi cab through the French streets of Paris. Like, I relate to that. I do that all the time. And that's my weekend, Amy. I drive backwards in New York City.
We have a fantastic fight choreographer. And Jeff has a fantastic stunt double. Jeff also does a lot of stunts, but then this other guy, he'd say that. And I think that I've never seen like hand-to-hand combat scenes that are so brutal. Like, Jeff's such an incredible actor. You feel it, right? You feel the exertion. You feel the pain. That first one in episode one of the first season, it goes on. People still talk about it. It's like, it goes on and on. I was like, because it's real. And he's tired. It's hard.
Yeah. You almost like you want to have somebody step in and go, all right, can we have a timeout? Let Jeff's character rest a little bit. He's on Medicare. And can we?
Exactly. Give him a joint. You know, he wants to, like, you know.
Right. He needs, can we get him, can we get Jeff some Ensure, please? Ensure for Jeff. By the way, Jeff was on The Late Show. Man, does that guy light up the theater, like, off stage? Like, he's got this thing, this, like, positive. It's like all of my problems went away. Like, it was like free therapy. I don't know what the vibe is that he's got. I don't know if it's the weed, but, like, it was so incredible. Yeah. Just, and I, he, yeah. We loved him on the show.
Well, I saw it, and I, no, what he did, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw a clip of it where Stephen's talking to him, right? I could be the guest about what he learned from his parents, I think, as actors and how to be. And then Jeff did, and I was like, ah, that's what Jeff does. He talked about himself, but then my memory is what he said is, you know, it's really about loving what you do. And then he turned it right to Colbert and he said, like, you, man, like, you love what you do.
Yeah.
And he has this way of shining the light back on the other person. I did a APK thing for season one, and they're like, you know, what is it like to work with him? And I said, well, I feel loved and seen and treasured and celebrated. And I, you know, and I said, listen, I get to play his love interest. And then I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, and I think everybody on the set would say the same thing. And that is not, that's by intention, right? He's been doing this so long that I he loves to act and all that stuff. He loves to create. But his spiritual practice is to lift up those around him. And he does. And it's really...
Right, but it feels genuine. Like, you know, if you... Yeah. You know, you said something about acting, you know, early on. And, you know, you would, you know, break the script down and find the beats and think about it a lot. And you do that less now. And it's more about in the doing. And that resonated with me. And we get that all the time from my acting coach, this guy, Bob Krakauer, that I study with. And if you watch Jeff in that interview, and if you turned, it's a Colbert interview, and you turned off the sound, I bet you could count a dozen times where he reaches over and just grabs Stephen's forearm as he's talking to him and does those little things that people do that seem little but are big and connect you with them and also connect the viewer because you see the two of them connecting emotionally, intellectually, and physically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He's incredible.
No, and I think he's such an important person in so many ways, but I also think, you know, I haven't ever worked with somebody who everybody loves, right? Male, female, young, old, gay, straight, red state, blue state, right? And it's really a model of how to be and kind of how to be that change, you know, how to be the change you want to see in the world. And it's really, you know, the political violent rhetoric and like just the mean spiritedness is really hard on him. It's hard on me too, you know, but I think when your value is to, you know, as you were saying about your wonderful show, just really go beyond these definitions and just feel soul to soul. He really does.
You know, your character is like, I love it because it's so written in such a way and acted in such a way that it's real. Like, you can see that you're sort of this new to this world and you're an outsider. And I feel like you're a vessel for me, the viewer, because you have expressions on your face. Like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, why would you react that way that I'm having as I'm watching this? And I think that's really powerful. Was that something that you worked on consciously with the showrunners and in the preparation for your role?
No, but I think that's kind of like dramaturgically built into the character that because she's the outsider and learning this world and this story, she's the entree for the audience, you know? And sometimes I would have to make sure what does Zoe know? Because sometimes the flashbacks would kind of serve, like Steinberg would say, now Zoe knows that too. It's almost like Jeff would be telling me that story and we see it in flashback. But I did have to track that. Like, what do I know and when do I know it? And then I think that, you know, it's like any closed world. So this world of the CIA, this world of the, you know, history in Afghanistan, all of the kind of like millions of it's a culture, right? And things make sense in that culture. And I think that the joy of Zoe is going like, that's a weird culture, or that's really interesting culture. Or, you know, I think that for her, and I kind of relate to this as you know, I've been sort of naive about certain levers of power in internationally, say, you know, and I think that's the level we're talking about, especially in season two. Or I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but the Joel Grey level is the real master, right?
You could see that.
So, yeah, it's like a little wink and a nod, and the market falls in Tokyo. You know, I mean, crazy stuff that I actually do understand now, and I don't understand deeply. But I think that because Zoe's just sort of a normal citizen, the way most viewers would be. So it's this daunting of this system, but then also she gets welcomed in and starts to operate on that level. And I think that, you know, what was important for me is to not make her, you know, super confident all of a sudden, but also to not make her a total naive, you know, 20-year-old girl. Like she's a woman who's had a life, you know? So to titrate that was always interesting, because there's a scene there's a sequence in season two where I handle a gun, and there's Zoe. It's not the first time Zoe's handled a gun. She kind of grew up somewhat in a gun culture, but she hasn't handled a gun for a long time, right? So it's just making sure, like, I'm not super confident, but I'm also not a super clunky, naive person either. So that's always interesting to titrate.
I think you walk that line perfectly, and that's why it's so believable. It's a fantastic show, and you've had an incredible career, and it's really great to have you on. It's FX is the Old Man with Jeff Bridges, John Lithgow, Amy Brenneman in season two. If you haven't started watching it, watch it from the beginning, and then you can't stop. So it's great to have you on, and let's reconnect soon, I hope.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been a real joy.
All right, that's the great Amy Brenneman, terrific actress, really fun. Hope you guys can make it on the road. PaulMercurio.com for tickets. On the road as we speak. Come on out. Annapolis, Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, Rhode Island, and other places coming up as well in the tour. So hope to see you out there. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody.